This is Paula Kaufman, returning with the Herald and Review, dated September 29, 2016. We will continue with the death notices. Cooper, Brian Jefferson Cooper, age 37, of Decatur, formerly of Loda, died at 4:20 p.m. Monday, September 26, 2016, at Memorial Medical Center in Springfield. His visitation will be from 1 to 3 p.m. Saturday, October 1st, at Lamb Funeral Home in Gibson City, with a service following at 3 p.m. Callie Nicole Malove Drake, 2-month-old infant daughter of Shaniqua Bradford and Deontay Drake Sr. of Decatur, was placed in the loving arms of Jesus on Sunday, September 25, 2016, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Funeral services will be 11 a.m. Saturday, October 1, 2016, in Morin and Gerbel Funeral Home. Visitation will be for 1 hour prior to the services at the funeral home. Burial will be in the Garden of Angels at Graceland Cemetery. Paul Wayne Fear, 88, of Forsyth, passed away Monday, September 26, 2016, at Decatur Memorial Hospital, with his family by his side. Roger D. Garin, 69, of Maroa, Illinois, passed away 3:52 p.m. September 25, 2016, at the John Warner Health and Services, Clinton, Illinois. Services will be 11 a.m. Friday, September 30, 2016, at the Calvert Funeral Home, Maroa, Illinois. Burial will follow at the Maroa Cemetery, Maroa, Illinois. Visitation will be 10 to 11 a.m. Friday at the funeral home in Maroa, Illinois. Leon Charles Parton Sr., 78, of Blue Mound, Illinois, passed away on Monday, September 26, 2016, at St. Anthony's Memorial Hospital, Effingham. A service to celebrate Leon's life will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Monday, October 3, 2016, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Blue Mound. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation from 3 to 5 p.m. on Sunday. Leon will be laid to rest at Camp Butler National Cemetery. Charlotte Webb, 71, of Decatur, passed away Tuesday, September 27, 2016, in her home, surrounded by her family. Police issue warrant in U of Illinois fatal shooting. Champaign. An arrest warrant has been issued in the deadly weekend shooting at a party near the University of Illinois campus for an 18-year-old man who was released earlier this month from a state boot camp, authorities said Wednesday. Prosecutors say Robbie Patton of Champaign will be charged with first-degree murder in the early Sunday shooting that killed a 22-year-old man and injured 3 other people. Patton was sentenced in April to 8 months in prison after pleading guilty to shooting at an occupied vehicle, but was instead sent to the Illinois Department of Corrections boot camp over our objections, Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Wright said. She said Patton is believed to be in the Champaign area and may be armed. Authorities are still investigating the shooting, which stemmed from a disagreement at a large party at an apartment in what is known as Campus Town, the campus's main commercial district, Wright said. Police said. One woman spilled a drink on another, leading to a series of altercations that included one man being badly beaten by several other men, Wright said. The man who was beaten has since been released from the hospital. The shooting happened a short time later, and police were called at 12:38 a.m. None of the 4 victims in the shooting were involved in the fight, police have said. George Korchev, a 22-year-old from Mundelein, who had recently completed nursing school, though not at the University of Illinois, was killed. A second shooting, about a half hour later, several blocks west of campus, injured one person. Police initially thought it was linked to the earlier shooting, but now say that's not the case. Patton pleaded guilty in April to aggravated discharge of a firearm in a December 2015 shooting incident. The nature of that shooting and Patton's juvenile record led Reitz to object to his attorney's request that Patton be sentenced to boot camp, she said. It was a shooting in a parking lot of a restaurant in broad daylight on a busy retail area of our community, she said. Boot camp, she said, also was not part of the plea deal. Had she known Patton's attorney planned to ask for it, Wright said she might not have agreed to the 8-year sentence, the maximum for which someone can instead be considered for boot camp. Patton's attorney in that case, Daniel Jackson of Champaign, did not return a call seeking comment. To be sent to one of the state's two boot camps, a judge and the Department of Corrections have to agree. The stays range from 120 to 180 days. The department issued a statement Wednesday that said only that Patton met the legal criteria for participation, and the department conducted additional screenings before deeming him eligible to participate. Vintage Shop Hop offers tour of unique local stores by Allison Petty, H&R staff writer. Warrensburg, a group of 10 stores that specialize in antiques and consignment, plans to offer a unique incentive for visitors, cash. People who visit all of the stores during the inaugural Vintage Shop Hop this weekend can enter into a drawing for a $350 prize. The event runs from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Friday and 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday. Wanda Timmons, owner of The Perfect Pair in Warrensburg, visited all of the businesses herself, so she knows it can be done in that amount of time. Every store has unique items for visitors, and several also sell food or beverages, she said. We're not in competition. There's so much out there, Timmons said. We're a retail store that has unique inventory, but so are all the other stores on the Shop Hop. The stores extend from Clinton and Chestnut to Booty and Blue Mound, with visitors able to pick up a punch card at whichever one they visit first. Each business contributed $50 toward the cost of marketing and the cash prize. This is the perfect time of year for such an event because shoppers can get a good idea of what's out there before holiday shopping picks up, Timmons said. While many are seduced by the convenience of online shopping, local businesses have the internet beat for unique items and atmosphere. What we have, you're not gonna find on Amazon, she promised. Kelly Wingard, owner of the Root Cellar in Decatur, was busy Wednesday reorganizing the store for new visitors. Many people don't realize it is tucked away inside Wildflower Artisan Bakery and Cafe, she said. Wingard views the event as the Root Cellar's coming out party, as the stock has recently been reorganized with fewer antiques and more upcycled furniture, craft supplies, and other offerings. It's kind of a well-kept secret, she said, but we don't intend it to be well-kept. Headshot, first stage show at Milliken, by Donette Beckett, H&R staff writer. Decatur. Milliken University student Trinity Thomas auditioned for a part in the upcoming production Headshot without any knowledge of the play. The actors were not given a reference other than a few character descriptions. We didn't have a script, which was both terrifying and exciting at the same time, Thomas said. We had to adapt as actors. Headshot is an original production designed by Kerry Margolis, director and co-artistic director of MB Adapters Company. Millikan Actors will have 5 performances of the new play Thursday, September 29th, through Sunday, October 2nd, at the Albert Taylor Theater in Schilling Hall. Whoever comes to this play will be the only ones who are going to see it, Margolis said. It won't be like anything they have seen before. Margolis and co-artistic director Tony Brown created the concept of the show with just an idea for a plot. The story follows a group of actors who create an image they feel they are supposed to look and act like in order to be successful. Although the characters relate to her career, Margolis believes the struggles can fit anyone's lifestyle. 8 actors arrive for an audition they think is the break of a lifetime. They arrive at an old factory with no one there to tell them what to do. Their imaginations run wild, and the craziness starts to unfold. Other characters include the spirits of the factory, or the motley crew, who are a contrast of the living actors. They no longer have dreams of their own, and their job is to manifest the dreams of others, Margolis said. Another added element to the production is the cast of Mission Control. They are a stylized version of a stage manager, lighting, and a sound operator, Margolis said. They remind us we are in a fantasy world. The group also takes on dual roles as the band. Margolis describes the end of the show as hilarious, touching, inspiring, and entertaining, as well as educational. We can either wait to make our dreams come true, or we can take the reins ourselves, she said. Brown and Margolis have worked to merge all the personalities into a reality, but they didn't do it alone. Headshot has toured for 2 years. The seeds for this project started at Millikan 1 year before. MB Adapters Company has been creating all original productions since 1984. We travel, taking themes of the show and creating different versions with different groups of artists, Margolis said. Headshot is their 18th production. The show has been performed in Barcelona and New York. With each performance, the new group explores new information from ideas and characters of the current performers. The Millikan actors and directors added music and a multimedia aspect to this weekend's show. We've also added 9 characters, Margolis said. We will continue to develop it as it moves on. Jared Hansen, core ensemble member and assistant director, has performed in all productions of the play. We have the beginning, he said, but they bring their own dimensionalities to the characters until there are completely different characters. The directors watch the evolution of the play, knowing it will continue to grow. They also understand it is their responsibility to educate and help the students expand their knowledge with new tools and skill sets. Actor Jake Wagner felt he was given a major role in developing the view of the characters while learning about his future career. They have sculpted us, but did not reject any of our ideas, he said. We are taught that the best theater comes from true collaboration and responsiveness. If you go. Headshot, 7:30 p.m. Thursday, September 29th, Friday, September 30th, 2 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. Saturday, October 1st, and 2 p.m. Sunday, October 2nd, at the Albert Taylor Theater in Millikan University's Schilling Hall. Tickets are $14, $12, and $4 for obstructed view. Kane, Explaining the Beatles' Continued Relevance by Tim Kaine, H&R Entertainment Editor. Why would the story of a group's five-decades-old travels be worthy of 100 minutes of film time, especially considering those travels covered a mere 4 years? The answer is another piece of the strange and wonderful hold the Beatles continue to have over our imaginations and existence. The Beatles, 8 days a week, subtitled The Touring Years, is a documentary by Ron Howard, currently in limited release around the country. It details the world tours of the Beatles from 1963 through 1966, including historic shows like the August 1965 show at New York's Shea Stadium. With an attendance of 55,600, it was the largest concert in history to that point, just one of any number of attendance records the Beatles established. The film and its largely 50-plus-year-old footage is not competing with superheroes at the box office. Its total gross to date barely eclipsed the amount brought in last weekend around the country by Bad Moms, which has entered its third month in theaters. The Beatles had broken up by the time even the oldest of the Bad Moms leads were born. Yet, something keeps driving us as a pop culture back to the Beatles. Their music's release to the digital realm was delayed, then heralded. The Beatles Anthology, an 11.5-hour documentary detailing the group's history, was released in 1995. November marks the 10th anniversary of the premiere of Love, a Cirque du Soleil Las Vegas show with a new soundtrack, remixed from existing Beatles tracks. In 2000, a Beatles hits package of 27 songs, One, sold 12 million copies and parked itself at the top of the Billboard album charts. That improbable occurrence cemented the ability of the band's music to reach across generations. So every few years, we revisit the works of those four musicians from England. But it hasn't been until 8 days a week that a possible explanation found its way into my head. Music journalist and historian John Savage discusses the prolific nature of the band. In their touring years alone, they played 400 shows, released in excess of 100 songs, made 2 films, and did assorted promotional appearances on television and radio. A pair of double CD sets, Live at the BBC and On Air, Live at the BBC Volume 2, collect close to 100 live radio performances. Savage compares the Beatles to Franz Schubert and Wolfgang Mozart. Mozart composed in excess of 600 pieces. He died at age 35 in 1791. Schubert wrote hundreds of pieces before his death at age 32, although very few were known before his death in 1828. Mozart at least enjoyed fame, if not fortune, in his time. Savage remarks about the overwhelming quality of the Beatles' work, particularly given the band's brief lifespan. The pronouncement is a rarity, an effort to truly quantify what too many of us cannot explain. Why does this band's music live on? Certainly, specific aging baby boomers line up to hand their money over to the Beatles' multimedia company, Apple Corps Limited. But those who purchased the compact disc of One, and those who continue to make Love a runaway Las Vegas success story, cut across all age groups and demographics. For years, Beatles acolytes have argued the classic nature of their works. The best of the Beatles, those fans, myself included, argue, will last into the future the way Mozart, Schubert, and Beethoven remain with us today. Finally, someone has made the argument and added some substance. Here is a way they compare the quantity and quality of the work. But that's not all that makes the Beatles last. It's difficult to watch their cheeky, self-deprecating manner and not have some affection. In one clip, Paul McCartney insists the group's work has nothing to do with culture, and they regularly mock observers commenting about their art. Yet, at the same time, the film makes clear the forward-thinking nature of these young men. The oldest, Ringo Starr, was 26 when the band stopped touring. If the only thing a viewer takes away from 8 days a week is that they refused to play for segregated audiences in the southern United States, that's still plenty. We just thought, why should you separate black people from white? That's stupid, isn't it? McCartney said. Forward thinking that applies even today. Maybe that's also a part of what makes the Beatles magic. Coaches Scatter to Meet Prospects by Mark Tupper, H&R Executive Sports Editor. Champagne. When defensive coordinator Hardy Nickerson went recruiting to his home state of California last weekend, he already knew the first question he'd be asked. The first thing they all want to know is, what's the weather there? Nickerson said, after using the recent bye week as a chance to introduce himself to West Coast prospects. They're surprised when I tell them, man, it's cooler out here than it is in Champaign. Nickerson, head coach Lovey Smith, and the 8 other coaches allowed to recruit off campus scattered around the country this past weekend, hitting high school hallways, prep sidelines, and junior colleges in search of players who can help Illinois win in the Big Ten Conference. For coaches like Smith and Nickerson, who until this season had been working in the National Football League, it was a chance to reacquaint themselves with a process that is the lifeblood for stocking college football rosters. Head coaches can't go out in the spring, so this was my first chance to get out and represent the university, said Smith, who last recruited in 1995 when he was coaching defensive backs at Ohio State. It was all good. Smith traveled to Florida, where he still maintains a home after being head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 2014 and 2015. Despite the fact that Illinois is 1-2 heading into this week's game at Nebraska, Smith said the message he brought to Florida was no different than if his first Illini team opened 3-0. The message is that the University of Illinois is a great place for an athlete to come to school for the degree, for the experience you'll get, and to be a part of how we do things. If you're an athlete out there, now at least they know what we're going to do. The response has been really good. I know that. Smith said it was important to get coaches in front of the players they are pursuing. All our coaches were out, he said. We felt like we flooded the country as much as we could. Nickerson is from the San Francisco Bay Area. He played collegiately at Cal and left a job as linebackers coach with the 49ers to join Lovey Smith at Illinois. He is trying to open doors that would allow the Illini to become a larger recruiting presence on the West Coast. And it doesn't hurt that his high-profile son now leads the Big Ten in tackles as Illinois' middle linebacker. That son, also named Hardy Nickerson, transferred from Cal. The reception was great, Illinois' defensive coordinator said. We got a chance to see some recruits, and they were excited to see me, excited to hear about what we've done and what we're building. I was very encouraged about that. After they ask about the weather, the next thing they want to know is where we're located in relation to Chicago. Guys are curious, but the reception has gone really well. Guys want to come and see what we have going on, so that's pretty big. The challenge is educating the recruits on where we are and just about the university in general. Talking to them about this great school opened a lot of eyes. And when you mention Coach Smith, the interest level goes through the roof. Nickerson said, "A positive factor in selling the University of Illinois is the presence of the Big Ten Network. With our games on television every week, that has helped tremendously," he said. "Kids are worried about their parents not being able to see them, but they can see them in the comfort of their own homes, and that's huge." Nickerson said he is tackling the responsibilities of recruiting just like he would any assignment during his 16-year NFL playing career. He attacks it aggressively. "This is my first go-round with recruiting, so I've just been going full speed ahead," he said. "I just talk to kids and am honest about them, what we're doing. I've talked to their high school coaches, and they've been very receptive to what we have and what we have to offer." Smith believes Illinois is doing well on the recruiting trail, despite having a new staff that didn't get started until March, long after the current 2017 recruiting cycle was underway. He's banking on making positive impressions that recruits won't be able to ignore. "I didn't know my wife before I met her, and we seemed to click just like that," he said. "The other part of the message is to be a part of this on the ground floor and as we go forward. I really do believe recruiting is like riding a bike. It's not like I've been in a third world country. I've been dealing with people. I've met parents before. You talk to people selling a product, and it comes back to you pretty quick. And we have a great product to sell." Campus notes. McKendry. 3 games into his freshman season, Brandon Wildman, Monticello, took over the starting quarterback job for the Bearcats. In his debut against Drake, Wildman was 15 of 30 for 173 yards. His day included a 39-yard touchdown run. The following week, he was 21 of 46 for 271 yards and 3 touchdowns. He also threw a pair of interceptions in a 28-14 win against William Jewell. Monty Wolke, Cumberland, had a busy day against William Jewell. The Bearcats punter kicked 13 times for an average of 39.2 yards. He had a long of 50 yards and kicked 3 inside the 20. For the season, he's averaging 38.2 yards per punt. Iowa. Jack Hockaday, Maroa Forsyth, has appeared in each of the football team's first 4 games. The sophomore linebacker has 6 tackles, all coming in the opener against Miami of Ohio. Eastern Illinois. Ivy Hanley, St. Teresa, has gotten off to a good start for the Panthers' cross-country season. Hanley opened with a third-place finish at the 4-team EIU Walt Crawford Open. She finished the 5K course in 18:09:19. In her next meet, the 10-team Illinois State Cross Country Invitational, she placed 13th. She was timed in 18:21:58. Taylor Smith, Mattoon, continues to lead NCAA Division I in triple doubles with 6 on this volleyball season through 16 matches. She leads the team in kills per set, 2.14, and assists, 4.12, and digs, 2.78. Southeast Missouri State. Marie Less of St. Teresa has played in each of the volleyball team's first 16 matches, starting 10 of them. She is 4th on the team in kills per set, 1.47, and 3rd in digs, 2.88. She had reached double digits in digs in 9 matches. This has been Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated September 29th, 2016. I look forward to reading with you again soon.